Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews. Welcome back to Thinking It Through. We're in this week with a Q&A panel from a relevant study of the book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature, the kind of literary genre that surfaces when the people of God, the faith community, face trials and tribulation at the hands of secular kingdoms and forces. It is a revelation of the ultimate triumph of God's kingdom over all the kingdoms of men. In spite of the fierceness of the world empires, they will all be subdued by the awesome power of God's reign over the hearts of men. Here's Dr. Gregory Tenation, resident minister at Jivanadi Mission, in part 15 of Facing the Furnace.
Hi folks, welcome back again to another study of the book of Daniel. So nice to have you. We have been enjoying the fireside chat, so to say. Now, previously we looked at the nature of this book, how it was put together. I mentioned that in strict sense, Daniel isn't really a prophet. He's not the prophet in the same sense that Ezekiel and Isaiah and Jeremiah were prophets, but the Lord Jesus refers to him in the New Testament as the prophet Daniel. So he's a unique kind of prophet that shared what we call apocalyptic visions and revelations with us. I have with me here in the studio today our panel, who would be interrogating the material that we have presented so far. So welcome to you, Vaughan. Welcome to you, Prem.
Thank you, Pastor Greg.
Thank you, Pastor Greg.
Well, we saw that it was the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, that brought Nebuchadnezzar down from the north to besiege the city. And we know that it wasn't just an instantaneous collapse of Jerusalem. In fact, there were two attempts, and there were actually more than one exiles that took place during that time. They captured it, or they took people, and they took people again. So it was an extended period. But these young men, Daniel and his three friends, found themselves living in hostile territory in a foreign country. Any questions that you have?
Yes, I do. How do we understand the different languages used in the book?
Well, chapters 2 to end of chapter 7 is written Aramaic. And the reason why it is written in Aramaic is because that was the lingua franca, the colloquial speech of that time. So we could say it was the secular language. That was the common day speech, like you'd see English today in many countries. If you go to Malaysia, for example, they'll speak Malay, they'll speak Mandarin, Hokkien, and different languages. But when it comes to business language and understanding each other across the cultural barriers, they use English. Same thing in South Africa. We've got 14 plus official languages, but English is the lingua franca. So Aramaic was very much the language spoken in that part of the world at that time. Now, it's interesting that chapter 1 to the first couple of verses of chapter 2 is written in Hebrew. And chapter 8 to chapter 12, again, written in Hebrew. So you have Aramaic somewhat sandwiched in between these two, prologue and an epilogue in Hebrew. And the reason is because it is first and foremost addressed to the Hebrew people. So there you would find that the introduction is in Hebrew because it addresses the Hebrew situation. Then it switches to Aramaic so as to explain what God's purpose and his dealings with the heathen is going to be. So in a graphic way, in a syntactical way, so that it's very clear physically, God is now dealing with the heathen nations, not just Babylonia. Then he comes back to Hebrew to symbolize the fact that ultimately it's what God has to say to the Hebrew people in the context of their sojourn amongst the pagans and the heathen. So that's the significance of using the two different languages.
Is there any correlation between Daniel's vision and Nebuchadnezzar's dream?
That's interesting. You know, when you look at the style of the book of Daniel, you will notice it's a specific genre. It's called apocalyptic literature. So it's not really meant to be historical chronology unfolding, although it does have that element in it. It's more about the message that he wants to convey. And apocalyptic literature uses visions and dreams and symbols and signs in order to convey a spiritual message. And if you have a look at the content of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, you will see that it highlights four or five different historical unfoldings of things that happen. You will see, for example, in his vision of the tree in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar is speaking. He says, King Nebuchadnezzar, to the peoples, nations, and men of every language who live in all the world. Can you see the global reach of that announcement? And its pluralism, all the different peoples, the different nations. So it shows you it's not restricted to the Hebrew culture and context. He says in verse 2, it's my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. Now he's drawing the attention of the secular world, the pluralist world, to the fact that he's had an encounter with God. And he became like a wild animal. And God restored him so that God could become preeminent and be the Lord of over all. That's why he says, the Most High God. Meaning now there's none above him, not even the gods of Babylonia, which were so powerful. He conquered the world. They gave him the power to conquer the world, his perspective. But the God of Israel is higher and beyond all of that. Verse 3 says, how great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. It's not temporal like all the other gods of all the other nations. His dominion endures from generation to generation. It's not limited to the God of the king that he's worshipping at that time. So, he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, verse 4, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. I had a dream that made me afraid. As I was lying in my bed, the images and visions that passed through my mind terrified me. So I commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be brought before me to interpret the dream for me. So when the magicians, the enchanters, the astrologers, and the diviners came, I told them the dream, but they could not interpret it for me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence, and I told him the dream. He's called Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and the spirit of the holy gods is in him. So he recognized that Daniel's faith, Daniel's walk, Daniel's commitment, Daniel's dedication, Daniel's understanding of things was far superior to the magicians, the enchanters, the astrologers, and the diviners, and all the so-called wise men of Babylon. So, in other words, the message to the pagans and the heathen is, there is no God like the God of Israel. He's above and beyond everybody and anything else. I said, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no mystery is too difficult for you. Here's my dream, interpreted for me. These are the visions I saw while lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. And then he goes on to explain all about this tree. So the dreams that Nebuchadnezzar had and the vision that Daniel had correlate because it symbolically deals with the same issues, the same principles. And it's important to know that apocalyptic literature is not fortune-telling. So it doesn't want to spell out specifics about the future. It wants to lay down principles that you practice in times of duress and hardships and difficulties. If we look at the first dream that Nebuchadnezzar had in Daniel chapter 2, we will go to where Daniel is actually interpreting it. He says there in verse 31 of chapter 2, "You looked, O king, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, and its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. And while you were watching, a rock was cut, not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them." By the way, iron and clay is a very poor mixture, so it went for the weakest point. But it's important to see that there are four things mentioned there. It was the head of gold, the chest and arms of silver, the belly and thighs of bronze, the legs of iron, and the fifth thing, of course, was the mixture, the partly of iron and partly of clay. When you look at Daniel's dream, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and visions passed through his mind as he was lying on his bed, and he wrote down the substance of his dream. He said in verse 3, "Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. The first was like a lion, the second looked like a bear, one looked like a leopard, and the fourth beast was like a dragon. It was very terrifying and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims. It was different from the former beast, and it had 10 horns. And while I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came out from among them, and 3 of the first horns were uprooted before it." If you look at those four beasts, you see they correlate exactly to the four aspects of the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream. The head of gold, the arms and chest of silver, the thigh and buttocks of bronze, and the legs of iron. So it covers exactly the same period, but just from a different perspective. The secular perspective, Nebuchadnezzar, and the spiritual perspective, Daniel. So they run parallel.
Okay, Pastor Greg, I think you touched on one of the questions that I had jotted down, which would have been, what was the significance of the visions and dreams? And I know that we are running out of time, as we always do on Good News Community Radio, because of our good content. But the significance of the visions and dreams, but I think maybe also the relevance of the book of Daniel for Christians today. What is the relevance of the book of Daniel for Christians?
As I said, apocalyptic literature is a kind of literature that arises when the church or the faith community is under persecution and great pressure and duress. And then it's as if God, in a coded way, shares with them the light they need for the darkness they find themselves in. If they follow that light, they will be safe and secure. So the significance of Daniel is on the same level as the book of Revelation for the church today. One could say it was the revelation for the Old Testament. Ultimately, the message was clear that God was sovereign, He was supreme, and this hardship is a time of discipline for the people of God, but ultimately God is going to triumph. What he's saying is that evil has in itself the seeds of its own destruction. It cannot ultimately triumph. Ultimately, God will be glorified. God is still on the throne. He's holding the reins. And all these events that are unfolding that look so horrible and so bad are actually all under his control. It's only happened because the people of God disobeyed the word that came through the prophets of old. They were rebellious and stubborn, wayward. Now they are being disciplined. So the message of an apocalyptic piece of literature is to explain what's going on so that people would understand, but also to comfort and to say, be strengthened, be encouraged. It's all happening exactly according to plan. I'm still on the throne. I haven't let go of the reins. I'm still in charge, and it's going to all pan out to the benefit of the faith community in the end.
That was Dr. Gregory Denation in a Q&A from Part 15 of Facing the Furnace, a relevant study of the Book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature. Email any questions on the Book of Daniel you would like Dr. Denation to address next week to the email address at the end of the program. Join us again next week, same time, for Part 16, only on Thinking It Through. If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.